Chapter 54. How the Divine Essence, though one and simple, is a proper likeness of all things intelligible. And yet it may seem to someone difficult or impossible that the one and same simple thing, such as God's essence, be the proper type or likeness of diverse things, for, since the distinction of diverse things arises from their proper forms, that which by reason of its proper form is like one of them must needs be unlike another. Whereas, so far as diverse things have something in common, nothing hinders them from having one likeness, for instance a man and an ass, inasmuch as they are animals. Hence it would follow that God has not proper but common knowledge of things, because the operation of knowledge follows according to the mode by which the thing known is in the knower, even as heating follows the mode of heat, for the likeness of the thing known in the knower is as the form by which a thing acts. Therefore if God has proper knowledge of many things, it follows that he is himself the proper type of each. How this may be, we must investigate. As the philosopher says, forms of things, and their definitions which signify them, are like numbers. For in numbers, if one unit be added or subtracted, the species of the number is changed, as appears in the numbers 3 and 4. Now it is the same with definitions, for the addition or subtraction of one difference changes the species. Thus a sensible substance minus rational and plus rational differs specifically. Now in things which include many, it is not the same with the intellect as with nature, for the nature of a thing does not allow of the separation of those things that are acquired essentially for that thing. Thus the nature of an animal will not remain if the soul be taken away from the body. On the other hand, the intellect is sometimes able to take separately those things which are essentially united, when one is not included in the notion of the other. Wherefore in the number 3 it can consider the number 2 alone, and in a rational animal it can consider that which is only sensible. Hence the intellect is able to consider that which includes several things as the proper notion of several, by apprehending one of them without the others. For it can consider 10 as the proper notion of 9, by subtracting one unit, and in like manner as the proper notion of each lesser number included therein. Again, in man, it can consider the proper type of an irrational animal as such, and of each of its species, unless they imply the addition of a positive difference. For this reason a certain philosopher, Clement by name, said that the things of higher rank are the types of those of lesser rank. Now the divine essence contains the excellences of all beings, not indeed by way of composition, but by way of perfection, as we have shown above. And every form, whether proper or common, so far as it is something positive, is a perfection, nor does it include imperfection except in so far as it falls short of true being. Wherefore God's intellect can include within his essence that which is proper to each thing, by understanding wherein each thing imitates his essence, and wherein it falls short of his essence. For instance, by understanding his essence as imitable in respect of life and not of knowledge, it understands the proper form of a plant, or again as imitable in respect of knowledge but not of intellect, it understands the proper form of an animal, and so on. Hence it is clear that the divine essence, inasmuch as it is absolutely perfect, may be taken as the proper type of such thing. Wherefore God can have proper knowledge of all things thereby. Since, however, the proper notion of one thing is distinct from the proper notion of another, and since distinction is the principle of plurality, we must consider a certain distinction and plurality of understood notions in the divine intellect, in so far as that which is in the divine intellect is the proper notion of diverse things. Wherefore, since this is according as God understands the proper relation of similarity which each creature bears to him, it follows that the types of things in the divine intellect are not many nor different, except in so far as God knows that things can be like him in many and divers ways. In this sense Augustine says that God makes man after one type and a horse after another, and that the types of things are manifold in the divine mind. Wherein also the opinion of Plato holds good, in that he held the existence of ideas according to which all that exists in material things would be formed. Chapter 55. That God understands all things at the same instant. From the foregoing it is also made evident that God understands all things at the same instant, for our intellect is unable actually to understand several things simultaneously, because since the intellect in act is the thing understood in act, if it were to understand actually several things at the same time, it would follow that the intellect is simultaneously several things according to one genus, which is impossible. And I say according to one genus, because nothing hinders the same subject receiving different forms of different genera, even as the one body receives shape and color. Now the intelligible species by which the intellect is informed, with the result that the things themselves are actually understood, are all of one genus, for they have one essential nature, although the things whereof they are the species do not agree in one essential nature, wherefore neither are they contrary to one another as are the things outside the mind. Hence it is that, when we consider a certain number of things in any way united together, we understand them at the same time, for we understand a continuous whole simultaneously, and not part by part, and in like manner we understand a proposition, and not the subject first and the predicate afterwards, because we know all the parts by one species of the whole. From this we may gather that whatever number of things are known by one species, they can be understood simultaneously. Now all that God knows, He knows by one species, which is His essence. Therefore He can understand all things simultaneously. Again, the cognitive power does not know a thing except the intention be there, wherefore at times we do not actually imagine the phantasms preserved in the organ, because the intention is not directed thereto, for the appetite moves the other powers to act, involuntary agents. Hence we do not consider simultaneously a number of things if the intention be not directed to them simultaneously, and those things that must needs come under one intention must be understood simultaneously, since he who considers the comparison between two things, directs his intention simultaneously to both, and considers both at the same time. Now all those things that are in the divine knowledge must come under one intention, for God intends to see His essence perfectly, and this is to see it according to its whole power under which all things are comprised. Therefore God, in seeing His essence, sees all things simultaneously. Moreover, the intellect of one who considers many things in succession cannot possibly have only one operation, for since operations differ according to their objects, the operation whereby the intellect considers the first thing must needs be distinct from that whereby it considers the second. But the divine intellect has only one operation, which is its essence, as proved above. Therefore it considers all that it knows, not simultaneously but successively. Further, succession is inconceivable apart from time, and time apart from movement, since time is the measure of movement according to before or after. Now no movement is possible in God, as may be gathered from what has been said above. Therefore in God's thought there is no succession, and consequently whatever He knows He considers simultaneously. Again, God's act of understanding is His very being, as shown above. Now there is no before and after in the divine being, but it is all simultaneously, as proved above. Therefore neither is there before and after in God's thought, but He understands all things simultaneously. Moreover, every intellect that understands one thing after another is at one time understanding potentially, and at another time actually, for while it understands the first thing actually, it understands the second potentially. But the divine intellect is never in potentiality, but is always understanding actually. Therefore it understands things, not successively, but altogether simultaneously. Holy Writ bears witness to this truth, for it is said that with God there is no change, nor shadow of alteration. Chapter 56. That God's knowledge is not a habit. From the foregoing it follows that God's knowledge is not a habit, for wheresoever knowledge is habitual, all things are not known simultaneously, but some actually and others habitually. Now God knows all things actually in the same instant, as we have proved. In Him knowledge is not a habit. Further, he who has a habit, while not using it, is somewhat in potentiality, but not in the same way as before learning. Now it has been shown that the divine intellect is nowise in potentiality. Nowise is there habitual knowledge in him. Again, the essence of any intellect that knows something habitually is distinct from its intellectual operation, which is actual consideration, because the intellect that knows something by a habit lacks its operation, whereas it cannot lack its essence. Now in God his essence is his operation, as we have proved. Therefore there is no habitual knowledge in his intellect. Again, the intellect that knows something only habitually is not in its ultimate perfection, wherefore happiness, which is the best thing of all, is held to be not a habit but an act. Therefore if God has habitual knowledge through his substance, he will not be universally perfect considered in regard to his substance, and the contrary of this was proved above. Moreover, we have shown that he is intelligent by his essence, and not by any intelligible species added to his essence. Now every intellect with a habit understands by species, for habit is either ability of the intellect to receive intelligible species whereby it becomes actually understanding, or else it is the orderly collection of the species themselves residing in the intellect without complete actuality, and after a manner that lies between potentiality and act. Therefore in him there is no habitual knowledge. Further, habit is a quality. Now neither quality nor any accident can be ascribed to God, as was proved above. Therefore habitual knowledge is not becoming to God, since, however, the disposition by which one is only habitually considering or willing or acting, is like the disposition of one who sleeps. Hence David, in order to remove habitual knowledge from God, says, "Behold, he shall neither slumber nor sleep, that keepeth Israel." For the same reason it is said the eyes of the Lord are far brighter than the sun, for the sun shines always actually. Chapter 57. That God's knowledge is not discursive. Furthermore, we gather from the foregoing that God's thoughts are not argumentative or discursive. Our thoughts are argumentative when we pass from one thought to another, as when we reason from principles to conclusions. For a person does not argue or discourse from the fact that he sees how a conclusion follows from its premises, and considers both together, since this happens not by arguing but by judging of an argument. Even so neither does material knowledge consist in judging of material things. Now, it was shown that God does not consider one thing after another successively, as it were, but all things simultaneously. Therefore his knowledge is not argumentative or discursive, although he is cognizant of all discourse and argument. Again, whosoever argues views the premises by one consideration and the conclusion by another, for there would be no need after considering the premises to proceed to the conclusion, if by the very fact of considering the premises one were to consider the conclusion also. Now God knows all things by one operation, which is his essence, as we have proved above. Therefore his knowledge is not argumentative. Further, all argumentative knowledge has something of potentiality and something of actuality, since conclusions are potentially in their premises. But potentiality has no place in the divine intellect, as we have shown above. Therefore his intellect is not discursive. Moreover, in all discursive knowledge something must needs be caused, since the premises are, so to speak, the cause of the conclusion. Wherefore a demonstration is described as a syllogism that produces knowledge. But nothing can be caused in the divine knowledge, since it is God himself, as shown above. Therefore God's knowledge cannot be discursive. Again, those things which we know naturally, are known to us without our discoursing about them, as in the case of first principles. Now knowledge in God cannot be otherwise than natural, nor in fact otherwise than essential, since his knowledge is his essence, as we proved above. Therefore God's knowledge is not argumentative. Further, whatever is moved must be reduced to a first mover, that is mover only and not moved. Wherefore that whence comes the first source of movement, must be absolutely a mover unmoved. Now this is the divine intellect, as we have shown above. Therefore the divine intellect must be an absolutely unmoved mover, but argument is a movement of the intellect in passing from one thing to another. Therefore the divine intellect is not argumentative. Again, that which is highest in us is inferior to that which is in God, for the inferior does not touch the superior except in its summit. Now the summit in our knowledge is not reason, but understanding, which is the source of reason. Therefore God's knowledge is not argumentative, but purely intellectual. Moreover, all defect is far removed from God, because He is simply perfect, as proved above. But argumentative knowledge results from an imperfection of the intellectual nature, since what is known through another thing is less known than what is known in itself, nor does the nature of the knower suffice to reach what is known through something else, without this thing through which the other is made known. Now in argumentative knowledge, one thing is made known through another, whereas what is known intellectually is known in itself, and the nature of the knower suffices for the knowledge thereof without any means from without. Hence it is clear that reason is a defective intellect, and consequently the divine knowledge is not argumentative. Again, without any discourse of reason those things are understood whose species are in the knower, for the sight does not discourse in order to know a stone the image of which is in the sight. Now the divine essence is the likeness of all things, as we have proved above. Therefore it does not proceed to know a thing by a discourse of reason. It is also clear how to solve the arguments that would seem to prove the presence of discourse in the divine knowledge. First, because He knows other things through His essence, for it has been proved that this does not involve discoursing, since His essence is related to other things not as the premises to a conclusion, but as species to things known. Secondly, because some might think it unfitting that God should be unable to argue, for He has the knowledge of arguing as judging, and not as discoursing by arguing. Holy Writ bears witness to this truth, which we have proved by reason, for it is said all things are naked and open to His eyes. Because the things that we know by reasoning are not in themselves naked and open to us, but are opened out and laid bare by reason. Chapter 58. That God does not understand by composition and division. It may also be shown from the same principles that the divine intellect does not understand after the manner of a composing and dividing intellect, for He knows all things by knowing His essence. He does not know His essence by composition and division, since He knows Himself as He is, and in Him there is no composition. He does not understand by way of a composing and dividing intellect. Again, things composed and divided by the intellect are by nature such as to be considered by the intellect apart from one another, for there would be no need of composition and division, if from the very fact that one understood what a particular thing is, one knew what is or is not in that thing. Therefore, if God understands by way of a composing and dividing intellect, it follows that He sees all things, not at one glance, but each one separately, and yet we have proved the contrary above. Further, in God there cannot be before and after. Now composition and division come after the consideration of what a thing is, for this consideration is their foundation. Therefore composition and division are impossible in the divine intellect. Again, the proper object of the intellect is what a thing is, wherefore about this the intellect is not deceived except accidentally, whereas it is deceived about composition and division, even as the senses are always true about their proper objects, but may be deceived about others. Now, in the divine intellect there is nothing accidental, and only what is essential. Wherefore in the divine intellect there is no composition and division, but only simple apprehension of a thing. Moreover, the composition of a proposition formed by a composing and dividing intellect exists in the intellect itself, not in the thing that is outside the mind. Wherefore, if the divine intellect were to judge after the manner of a composing and dividing intellect, His intellect would be composite. But this is impossible, as shown above. Again, a composing and dividing intellect judges of various things by various compositions, because the composition of the intellect does not go beyond the limits of composition. Wherefore the intellect does not judge that a triangle is a figure by the same composition whereby it judges that man is an animal. Hence, if God considers things by composing and dividing, It follows that his act of understanding is not one only but manifold, and thus again his essence will not be one only, since his intellectual operation is his essence, as we proved above. Yet we must not therefore say that he is ignorant of enunciations, for his essence, since it is one and simple, is the type of all things multiple and composite, so that thereby God knows every multitude and composition both of nature and of reason. Holy Writ is in agreement with this, for it is said, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts," and yet it is said in the Psalm, "The Lord knoweth the thoughts of men," which manifestly proceed from composition and division of the intellect. Moreover, Dionysius says, "Wherefore divine wisdom, by knowing itself, knows all things, the material immaterially, divisible things indivisibly, multitude unitedly." Chapter 59. That God is not ignorant of the truth of enunciations. It follows from the foregoing that, although the knowledge of the divine intellect is not like that of a composing and dividing intellect, it is not ignorant of the truth which, according to the philosopher, is solely about composition and division of the intellect. For since the truth of the intellect is the equation of thought and thing, in so far as the intellect asserts that to be which is, and that not to be which is not, truth in the intellect belongs to that which the intellect asserts, not to the operation whereby it asserts, because the truth of the intellect does not require that the act itself of understanding be equated to the thing, since sometimes the thing is material, whereas the act of understanding is immaterial. But that which the intellect in understanding asserts and knows, needs to be equated to the thing, namely to be in reality as the intellect asserts it to be. Now God, by his simple act of intelligence wherein is neither composition nor division, knows not only the essence of things, but also that which is enunciated about them, as proved above. Wherefore that which the divine intellect asserts in understanding is composition or division. Therefore truth is not excluded from the divine intellect by reason of the latter's simplicity. Moreover, when something non-complex is said or understood, the non-complex in itself is neither equal nor unequal to the reality, since equality and inequality imply a comparison, and the non-complex in itself contains no comparison or application to a reality. Wherefore in itself it cannot be said to be either true or false, but only the complex which contains a comparison between the non-complex and the reality, expressed by composition or division. But the non-complex intellect, by understanding what a thing is, apprehends the quiddity of a thing in a kind of comparison with a thing, since it apprehends it as the quiddity of this particular thing. Hence, although the non-complex itself, or even a definition, is not in itself true or false, nevertheless the intellect that apprehends what a thing is said to be always true in itself, as stated in Threta Anima, although it may be accidentally false, insofar as the definition includes complexion either of the parts of the definition with one another, or of the whole definition with the thing defined. A definition, according as it is taken to be the definition of this or that thing, as understood by the intellect, will be said to be false either simply, if the parts of the definition do not hold together, as if we were to say an insensible animal, or false in its application to this particular thing, as if one were to apply the definition of a circle to a triangle. Hence, though it be granted, by an impossibility, that the divine intellect knows only non-complex things, it would still be true in knowing its quiddity as its own. Again, the divine simplicity does not exclude perfection, because in its simple essence it has all the perfections to be found in other things by the aggregation of perfections or forms, as was proved above. Now, our intellect, by apprehending the incomplex, does this not as yet reach to its ultimate perfection, since it is still in potentiality as regards composition and division, even as in natural things simple things are in potentiality in respect of mixed things, and parts in respect of the whole. Accordingly God, in respect of his simple act of intelligence, has that perfection of knowledge which our intellect has by both kinds of knowledge, whether of the complex or of the non-complex. Now truth is acquired by our intellect in its perfect knowledge thereof, when it arrives at composition. Therefore, there is truth in God's mere act of simple intelligence. Again, since God is the good of every good, through having in himself all manner of goodness, as we have shown above, the goodness of the intellect cannot be lacking to him. Now truth is the good of the intellect, as the philosopher declares, therefore truth is in God. And this is what is stated in the psalm, "But God is true."